Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, does prayer really work? Does God really answer prayer? Yes, he does, my friend. I can testify to that firsthand. I could share story after story of personal answers to prayer, which cannot possibly be explained any other way. Not possible. However, today is not about me. Today is about the condition of our country. Yes, our country needs prayer. That's awfully obvious. That's the understatement of the century. In fact, that's the understatement of every century since the history of the United States. Our president needs prayer. This president has worked tirelessly to keep all of us safe these past 4 years against odds that no president of the United States has ever had to face, including people from his own party and his own cabinet deserting him at the flank. But he's healthy. I do believe God has his hand on this man. On Friday morning, when I first heard the news that President Trump tested positive for COVID, I posted some words on Facebook. Let me read the words exactly as they were written. This is Facebook, Friday morning, October 2nd. Regarding President Trump testing positive for COVID, the most important thing, our prayers, I commented on in an earlier post. Now, my predictions. Other than one online story that he tested positive last night, I have deliberately refrained from watching or listening to any news simply to illustrate the predictability of the times we live in, the predictability of human nature, obsession against Trump, etc. Predictions. A call from the Dems, leftists, so-called mainstream media, and others for the president to immediately withdraw from the race. Biden's inability to string three sentences together in most of his speeches, no problem. A call for the president to at least stop campaigning if he doesn't withdraw, which he won't. Exuberant serves him right glee from those who would claim he had this coming by refusing to stop rallies, wear a mask as often as he should have, etc., as if people haven't been catching this thing despite masks and social distancing. In some cases, nasty wishes that he actually dies, emanating from certain talking heads or celebrities. An attempt on the part of Nancy Pelosi and House Democrats to try to remove him from office now. Not even making it a matter of the campaign, stepping down now. Of course, they'd have tried that again anyway over anything, including chewing the wrong pack of gum. And finally, Trump recovers. Trump recovers quickly. Trump explains that his doctor prescribed hydroxychloroquine. That's what I wrote. Ladies and gentlemen, since then, of course, I've been watching the news. You've been watching the news. Almost every single one of these items came true, and we didn't need to wait long. And it's not because they were difficult predictions. It's because we live in predictably stupid, evil times. Now, I could share hundreds of these things. I'm going to limit it to one. Zara Rahim. I may or may not be pronouncing that name properly. I don't care. What we should care about is what she said. She said, "It's been against my moral identity to tweet this for the past 4 years, but I hope he dies." Now, that wasn't just your ordinary troll. That was a former Obama staffer. That was a former campaign spokeswoman for Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. Well, no need to explain her moral identity. Apparently, it spoke for itself. And yet, it goes beyond the United States. Now, I'm reading from Independent. The editor of one of China's biggest state-run newspapers has mocked Donald Trump after both he and First Lady Melania Trump tested positive for coronavirus. The editor-in-chief of the state-owned Chinese tabloid Global Times claimed on Twitter that the president and Mrs. Trump have paid the price for the gamble to play down COVID-19. Ladies and gentlemen, this would be laughable if not so serious. China saying Trump played down the virus. China after they refused our inspectors and lied about the severity of the virus, after they lied and denied that it had been created in their own lab as a refugee Chinese doctor has proclaimed while fearful for her life, after they knowingly opened up travel out of their country, all the while shutting down the city it originated from? What's really sad is that this garbage works. Half the country blames the president. Joe Biden blames the president. And let's not blame Joe for defending China. He probably thinks he discovered China. After all, he was there with Marco Polo, wasn't he? He also helped to build the Statue of Liberty. He was also there when the Declaration of Independence was signed. Who do you think talked the others into signing it? He also bragged about his great relationship with former Klansman Robert Byrd. Oh, wait. I probably shouldn't repeat that last one because that one actually happened. Did you catch Joe during the debate last week accusing President Trump of doing nothing but sitting in his bunker? Now, what genius advisor whispered that talking point into Biden's ear? This is the man that everybody compares to the Energizer Bunny. This is the man that those around him have no idea when he ever gets any sleep. President Trump, who is currently being accused of traveling too much, thus getting COVID, is also guilty of sitting in a bunker. This from Joe Biden. Joe Biden? He's learning well from China, although America's left has practiced this same shenanigan for years. Project upon your opponent just exactly what you yourself have been doing. Yeah, that's a big bunker the president has. It stretches all over the country, and his influence continues to spread all over the world. Amazing how he got nominated for 2 Nobel Peace Prizes while sitting in his bunker. Then again, Joe Biden, of all people, would have reason to believe that a president could receive the Nobel Prize for doing absolutely nothing, inasmuch as he served under such a president. But don't allow people to be confused by actual facts. Don't allow people to be confused by trusting their own eyes. Don't allow people to be confused by anything they watch on a video. Just repeat several times that Trump is the one who has been hiding in a bunker. Yeah, and hope that people are stupid enough to believe it. Of course, the bigger problem in the debate is that Joe Biden repeated the same line he had used to start his campaign. This lie, his own lie, although it's a lie he repeated that he'd heard from many others. Joe never had an original thought in his life, but it was the lie he used to start his campaign. This lie that he put in the context of the announcement that he was going to run. It's an inspirational reminder that the idea of America is a quote-unquote guarantee that everyone is treated with dignity. Unfortunately, his means to achieving such dignity began with repetition of the boring falsity that President Trump is a racist, specifically keying in on the Charlottesville protests. With his words, the former vice president also insults half our nation's voters by suggesting they put a racist man into office. They were responsible. They put a racist man into office. And that may not have been the best recipe for dignity restoration. Be that as it may, Joe Biden's announcement video back then, laced with proof of his assertion, a revisitation of some controversial remarks made by the president after tragic violence broke out between white supremacists and protesters back in 2017, was filled with vigor. Biden very passionately reminded people that Trump reacted to the protests by saying that there were very fine people on both sides. With those words, Biden explained, the president of the United States assigned a moral equivalence between those spreading hate and those with the courage to stand against it. As a matter of fact, this frequently repeated snippet took Trump's actual words completely out of context. Here's what he actually said after Charlottesville. Above all else, we must remember this truth. No matter our color, creed, religion, or political party, we are all Americans first. We love our country. We love our God. We love our flag. We're proud of our country. We're proud of who we are. So we want to get the situation straightened out in Charlottesville, and we want to study it, and we want to see what we're doing wrong as a country where things like this can happen. Well, that was not enough to satisfy Trump's critics, who probably wouldn't have been satisfied no matter what he said. Their claim that he had not gone far enough in condemning racism was answered by Trump later in a press conference. So here's what he said then. He said, excuse me, they didn't put themselves down as neo-Nazis, and you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. So, you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture, and you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally, but you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats. You had a lot of bad people in the other group. Ladies and gentlemen, to any thinking, fair person, back then, President Trump clearly condemned racism. He had done it a gazillion times before then, a gazillion times after that, but this is the one that people keep going back to. It's the one Biden brought up again in the debate. He also, at that time, differentiated between white supremacists and those who were simply protecting a statue. Maybe you agree that statues should be taken down, maybe you don't, but yes, some people were there because of statues. Some people were white supremacists who were just looking for an opportunity to cause trouble. So much for the good and bad on one side. On the other side, in addition to law-abiding protesters, there was Antifa. How many times can we say that if a group like Antifa isn't evil, the word evil should be removed from the dictionary? And of course, Trump's assessment of that group has been borne out. Just ask anybody that lives in Seattle. Just ask anybody that lives in Portland, New York City, Chicago, Minneapolis, other big cities across the country. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Wallace knew all this before he brought it up last week. He knew all this before he brought up at the debate once again the idea of Trump denouncing white supremacy. He knew this when he brought it up last week, just as he knew and remembered that he had heard Trump denounce white supremacy back in a 2016 debate. He was the moderator back then, too. He was the one who asked Trump to denounce it. It's on record. Go to YouTube. Listen to it. Last week, I was on the CGM radio show Crosstalk. When they asked me what I thought of the debate, my answer was, what debate? I also mentioned on Crosstalk and on my Sunday show last week that while Wallace is a self-proclaimed liberal, I have always at least found him to be fair when asking questions of both sides. That was not the case last week. He was a big disappointment. Let's review. We keep hearing about Trump interrupting. That's the main talking point. Trump interrupted. Trump wouldn't condemn white supremacy. He condemned it again last week. He condemned it again and again. Wallace kept interrupting him and asking him to condemn it while he was already condemning it. But again, back up. We keep hearing about Trump interrupting. Biden interrupted first and often afterwards, as he has done in debate after debate in the past. Did you see that debate he did with Paul Ryan a number of years ago? His behavior was swinish. Trump went in there determined to not let him get away with it. Again, Biden interrupted first and often afterwards. I didn't take out a calculator to see who interrupted more, but frankly, for the most part, they were interrupting each other. I don't like it when any side does it. Biden did start it. He continued doing it, but not as loudly. He's not as loud as Trump. Wallace called out Trump when he interrupted, did not call out Biden when he interrupted. Or if he did, he did it very few times, and I didn't even remember any of them. Maybe he did once or twice. Essentially, he was not calling out Biden. He was calling out Trump. And supposedly, none of Biden's manners are things we're supposed to remember. Manners such as, just shut up, man. You're the worst president we ever had. Not to mention him constantly lying through his teeth, word after word. Biden still goes around to this day on the campaign trail a week later saying not once has Trump ever condemned the Ku Klux Klan. Not once has he ever condemned white supremacy. Trump's administration had already put the Ku Klux Klan on a terrorist list. They labeled them a terrorist group. But Biden just goes around lying more than Pinocchio. If he was Pinocchio, his nose wouldn't fit into a room. And he's getting away with it. People are buying it. The so-called swing voters. Sad time for our country. And speaking of rules, Wallace complaining that by interrupting, Trump wasn't honoring the rules. Well, okay, yeah, Trump wasn't honoring the rules. Let me ask you a question. Did those rules include Trump having to debate two people instead of one, which became quite apparent to him that that's the way it was going to be about 10 minutes into the debate? Trump had every right at that point to disregard the so-called rules. Having said that, yes, unfortunately, debates are about audience perception. And therein lies the problem. These presidential debates are not real debates. Let me say that again. These presidential debates are not real debates. We never witness an authentic debate during an election year. Instead, we are seeing glorified press conferences. In a real debate, each opponent gets an uninterrupted, and yes, it should be uninterrupted, opening statement of a mutually agreed upon length, more than 2 minutes. This is followed by a time for rebuttal. It's the opponents doing the rebutting, not the moderator. The moderator stays out of it. Usually there's a cross-examination included. Again, the opponents cross-examining each other. The moderator just sits there and keeps his mouth shut. That is the most telling part of a debate, when they cross-examine each other. Each opponent or candidate or whatever you want to call them must answer to the other one. If they try to respond with double talk, hoping nobody will notice that they did not answer the question, it becomes painfully obvious. But when the moderator throws one of them a lifeline and says, "Time's up," just when the person was about to fall all over himself, it's problematic. And words and phrases such as bipartisanship or the American people fail to whitewash a downright dodge in a real debate. The cross-examination is then followed by closing statements. Sometimes questions from the audience are taken after the debate proper. In a real debate, the victor wins on the consistency and accuracy of his or her points. It simply does not matter who had the most charisma. Charisma can be a factor, since one must not only make a case but make it persuasively. Unfortunately, audiences can be sheep, and charisma takes on far too dominant of a role. In George W. Bush's first debate with John Kerry, Bush made some good points, and Kerry sometimes said contradictory things. The conventional wisdom still gave the nod to Kerry when the evening was over. Why? Because throughout the debate, Bush had a scowling look on his face. And when Obama debated McCain, what we heard was Obama came across as very presidential. Nobody's able to define what that means. He came across as presidential. Who cares? What are his policies? What's he going to do to the country? Did he answer the questions? Was he consistent? And everyone remembers the classic Kennedy-Nixon debate. The first time such a forum was televised, radio audiences declared Nixon the winner. Television audiences gave the nod to Kennedy. Those who heard the debate on the radio were mostly responding to the arguments alone because there was no facial expression to watch. Yet, even on radio, Nixon's voice had the unfair advantage of sounding more authoritative and experienced than Kennedy's. That's why the best thing would be to just read the transcript afterwards and not watch or listen at all. However, on TV that night, people noticed Nixon sweating while Kennedy looked happy, calm, and collected. Turned out Nixon had the flu that night and nobody had known. Gotta admire him for going on. Not a big Nixon fan, but I'm saying in this case, you gotta admire him for going on. Many also considered the youthful Kennedy to just be plain better looking than Nixon. But winning for good looks is a discussion for another day. In a real debate, the moderator is little more than a referee. True moderators enforce rules which the two opponents agree to, making sure nobody goes over their allotted time and keeping one opponent from interrupting the other. Yeah, that much they are supposed to do, and that's about all they're supposed to do. But they don't get bent out of shape because they needed to interrupt and keep them on time because they had another question. Who cares what Wallace's questions were? I wanted to hear what questions Trump had for Biden. I wanted to hear what questions Biden had for Trump. I wanted to hear their answers. It should not have been an agenda being steered by Chris Wallace or any other moderator. In such a format, it simply does not matter what opinion the moderator holds or who the moderator is secretly rooting for. The moderator's opinions are not supposed to be embedded in any questions. He shouldn't even be asking questions at all. As I've said, moderators are not supposed to set the tone for the debate. Neither do they declare who is right or wrong right in the middle of the debate, as Candy Crawley did when President Obama tried to pretend he had called the Benghazi attack a terrorist attack right from the start, which he hadn't. Maybe people will wake up. Maybe they won't. But here's the thing. Listen to me carefully, folks. The Democrats at this point are assuming people will wake up. The Democrats are assuming Trump will win. Whether he'll really win, I don't know. I do know they're assuming he will win. Yes, the Democrats are assuming Trump will win. That's why they're using this COVID-19 paranoia. I know it's a real virus, but there's deliberate, disseminated paranoia so that it can be used as an excuse to do as much mail-in balloting as possible. They plan to run out the clock. They plan to discover all kinds of previously unknown trucks with boxes full of mail at the last minute. Hold the press. Hold the press. Don't declare the election yet. We declared it prematurely. After election night, they want to drag it out day after day until finally the courts have to decide and or go beyond the courts. Let it continue until mid-January, at which time, if things are not settled, depending how other races go, Nancy Pelosi could become our president. If that just doesn't horrify the snot out of you, I don't know what will. That is the plan. That is their only real plan for the election at this point. Now, someone out there is listening and going, oh my gosh, who is this guy on the radio? Conspiracy theory. Oh yeah, yeah, you're probably right. It's probably a conspiracy theory. The real facts don't match up much. Facts like this latest news report that memory sticks and laptops used to program Philadelphia voting machines were stolen from a warehouse. However, city officials say they are confident the integrity of their election has not been compromised. That was a close one. For a moment there, I was concerned. If these city officials say there's no compromise, that's good enough for me. This is the same city, incidentally, that saw some Trump poll watchers chased away from an early voting satellite station. Relax, that isn't cause for concern either. According to officials, well, yeah, this did happen, but only because these poll watchers had certificates for Election Day, not early voting. Oh, I see. I get it. Got that? Yeah, Election Day is important. So important. They're encouraging as many people as they can to vote before Election Day. So important. Poll watchers aren't allowed to check on those voting earlier because Election Day is important. Philadelphia is also where some earlier absentee military ballots were recovered after having been thrown away. Guess what most of these ballots had in the checkbox? Guess who they were voting for, most of these military people? I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. Yeah, Trump. Now, other than these few little hiccups, all is well in Philadelphia. Honest, open, and above board. Same thing with all the other blue states. Move on, folks. Nothing to see here. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.